Live from the Musa Slobodian Network studio, welcome to the Ali Musa Show, part of the Musa Slobodian Network, the show that covers the world of broadcasting, the Canadian media landscape, sports media, the show's favorite sports teams, as well as news and politics. Here's your host, Ali Musa.
Good afternoon. Today is Monday, February 2nd, 2026. I thank you for tuning in. Well, we are going to discuss some Leafs and Raptors this afternoon, and I am joined by Jim Taddy. Jim, thanks. Thank you so much for hopping in for this Leafs and Raptors chat.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for thinking of me.
Absolutely. Now let's start here with the Leafs here. I want to sort of go back a little bit there were a couple of games with Vegas there. They had first of all, they went to Vegas, faced Mitch Marner, and he came back and he also made his return to Toronto. What did it sort of say? And Mitch Marner and the Golden Knights beat them both times.
Yeah, I guess what it said was more so in the visit to Toronto, how the Golden Knights rallied around Mitch and played for him, and the Leafs. It's an interesting contrast because the Leafs sort of wanted to downplay the game and just say it was just another game. But it wasn't. The crowd reaction was every time Mitch was on the ice, he got booed. And when he left, he got cheered, which is kind of a hockey thing. I guess you could sort of isolate those two games and build a story on that. But for me, the story is that they're sort of symbolic of other Leaf problems that have put them where they are in the standings. Those are two sample sizes that have a different sort of slant on them. But the team's problems venture into other games. That's the way I would look at it.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. And also, too, and I also feel that that Mark Savard had nothing to do with it.
Well, that's an opinion piece, I guess. Since Steve Sullivan's been at it, the power play's a lot better. So, you'd have to be privy to what is said behind closed doors to understand how that situation unraveled, and we're not there. So
exactly.
To make the decisions on that. You could obviously, come up with a hot take from the outside, but those that make the decisions, I always defer to them.
And you know what, Jim, to be honest, that's really the best sort of way to do it, because I'm not a big fan of those hot takes where they just kind of go, but I think, yes, the power play has been better. And, I mean, sure, certainly the Leaf problems have certainly have been, they're pretty close to last place, if you look at it, almost.
Yeah, you're right. I think the power play's part of a problem, but there's other problems. I defer to the people that make the decisions, because that's a process.
Yep.
And so if they make a number of the wrong decisions, then the decision makers are judged on that. Who knows what goes on, as they say, behind closed doors. You don't know what the discussions are or what the body language is and any of that stuff. But the bottom line is the team has other issues. It's in danger of not making the playoffs. And I don't think that there were too many narratives that way in the summer. So it's a drastic drop off from where they are. And you can see, when you look at the teams that succeed, how they play, and the Leafs have shown from time to time they know how to do that, but they're either not capable or willing to do that on a nightly basis, and that may be a roster issue. So, it's a long sort of answer to they're not going to make the playoffs or they're in danger of that.
Yep. Yeah. And the other side of it is too, the wins they've been getting, like the win this past Saturday in against the Canucks. Yes, it was in a shootout, but it feels like just those wins that they've been getting have really been it's really been sort of, oh, okay, this is a step. You know, they've certainly, as we just pointed out, that they've got, they certainly have, that they're capable of putting some wins together.
Yeah, I think it's, you're looking for that moment that tells you it's going to be okay, or that game, or that performance, that it's going to right itself. I don't know that there is if that's very true or not, because I don't think that there's a moment. You just have to keep playing a certain way, which means you have to be physical. You have to win along the boards. You have to be defensively responsible. You need the goaltending. There's a whole bunch. Your special teams have to be really good. There's a lot of elements there that sporadically show up. And I would suggest to you that any team that's outside the playoffs would have the same description.
Yep. Yeah. And, they've got the 2-week Olympic break coming up, which it will certainly be a chance for them to reset a little bit.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that break is, I'm just going to get up my schedule here. Their last Please game do. Is tomorrow night in Edmonton. And their next game after that is February 25th in Tampa. So that is, let's say, 21 days. Obviously, they practiced beforehand. But the big question is, and we've seen it in the past when the Leafs weren't good, that when they came out of those breaks, they just disintegrated. Now, I'm not saying that they're going to have problems, but it's going to be an interesting look across the league to see who does well after that break. And some of these teams have a lot of players involved in the Olympics. And, you know, the Olympics has a different sort of special tone to it than even the Four Nations Cup or all those other things that we've had in the past. So, you know, everybody has to be healthy, because there's a lot of games crammed into the end of the schedule. And then you've got four rounds of playoffs. So it's going to be an interesting study for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have to be honest, I'm looking forward to the Leafs returning to action after that Olympic break. I know it hasn't started, but...
I would agree with you. Look, their games after the Olympic break are in Tampa, the next night in Florida. So that's Wednesday, Thursday, then Saturday at home to Ottawa. Those are three pretty big hockey games.
Yep. Yeah, no, I mean, certainly, yes. I mean, now you've got, I mean, certainly, think it'll be a chance to maybe give the Raptors a little bit of a couple of weeks there while the Leafs are off, I guess.
Well, the Raptors have their own NBA All-Star break that happens from February 12th until, I guess, the 17th. They're doing well. The Raptors have the trade deadline this week of Thursday, so we'll see. They need outside shooting, which may be harder to obtain, and they need to know Poeltl's health. And if he's not healthy, they'll need to bring in a big somewhere along the line. Or, you know, because they've made big strides this year, maybe they feel they'll just let it ride out. I mean, I don't know how far you want to improve in one season. I don't know. Well, Thursday will tell you exactly what the management thinks or what their agenda is for this season.
Yeah, I mean, they have to keep B.I., though.
Oh, they're not trading him. Absolutely not. He's a key factor. He'll do things at the key moment of the game, and you just watch him and you go, well, that guy is... He's really a really good ball player, and he looks after his business, and he helps the team, which means everybody else doesn't have to sort of overcompensate. You can watch them play now and imagine where they would be without him. It wouldn't be very good.
No, and I think, too, it's been nice to see the Raptors doing as well as they have this year. Considering the seasons they had last year and a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I would agree with that. But there was some sense to it. Here's what I'm going to tell you. I'm going to throw this theory out here now, which would frustrate Maple Leaf fans. If you want to go back to 2013, so that's exactly 13 years. Let's go back 12 to 13 years and find out that both those franchises are not in great shape. And what did the Raptors do? They brought in Masai Ujiri. He made some big trades. He got them in the playoffs. They had limited playoff success. They kept running into a brick wall. And then it was understood that they had to do something drastic to get playoff success. After 4 or 5 years of, you know, it was obvious that something had to change. So what he did was he fired his head coach, who was the coach of the year. He traded DeMar DeRozan, brought in Kawhi Leonard. They won the title. The next year, they were on their way to a good season, and COVID locked everything down. And then they gradually eroded towards the basement of the standings in quick fashion. And in quick fashion, look at them this year. They're the fourth seed. They have drafted their way out of that and made some key trades, like B.I. is a good trade. There's many, R.J. and Quickley is a good trade. And so they've been able to reposition themselves. If you watch that 12-year arc, you go from nothing to championship. No, let's do it properly. You go from nothing, stumbling in the playoffs, to championship, down, and back up. What's the Leaf arc like? It goes like this, from nothing to making the playoffs, flatline, right across, and now down.
Yeah.
Same team, same ownership, right?
Yeah.
Same company owns the both of them. Total contrast.
Yeah, and of course, and I mean, yeah, that's like, and that's been what's the interesting part, right? And of course, Scotty Barnes has done his, and Scotty Barnes has been a contributor as well.
Absolutely. And so they drafted him. So there's another key thing. If you look at the difference between the Leafs and the Raptors, the Leafs have traded so many draft picks away and have tried to so again, get this. They're running into a brick wall in the playoffs like the Raptors did, and they keep adding patchwork replacements at the deadline. First round picking somebody for somebody else. Sometimes the somebody else didn't stay. Sometimes they did, but they paid a high price. They did that year after year after year to the point where they don't have a lot of draft picks left. The Raptors were able to make those trades not necessarily, they didn't bankrupt themselves with the draft. They kept all their picks and were able to draft their way back. So that is another difference. Asset management. Aside from the decisions that the Raptors made that the Leafs did not, the Raptors had better asset management.
Yeah, and see, with the, like, see, I still kind of feel, and I've said this before, but I feel that when the Leafs traded Marner, I feel like they had a hole there that they didn't really have, that they didn't replace or weren't able to.
Yeah, that's a hard thing to replace in one summer.
And
many people said at the time, save the $12 million and spread it over three players, which I think they did, but you're still not getting the 100 points back. And so it's not all on that. It's also on, without the 100 points, you have to play differently, which they have shown they can do at times, but I don't know if they have the roster to do this on a regular basis. And I mean, you know, when I talk about the physical play, all you have to do is look at Nick Robertson, smallish forward. And this guy plays physical every night. He's tough along the boards, and that's where a lot of the game is played. Your forecheck pressure's along the boards, on your breakout is along the boards. And if you can have your forwards control those boards, size isn't a thing. If you watch Detroit, Alex DeBrincat, who's a small forward, is their toughest player outside of Mo Sider. I mean, he's a small forward. Nick Robertson, much the same. So you need guys that are willing to play like that.
Yeah, and certainly, I think, yeah, over one, like, yeah, I mean, the post-Marner era really cannot be judged even over one season either. That's another sort of factor as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a long-term thing. Problem with the league picture is Marner not replaced. Hyman, not replaced. Kadri, not replaced. Those are sizable holes on a roster. I mean, part of the equation is where, you know, this guy is going to be moved or he's going to leave. The other part of the equation, the most important part, is what's coming back. And if the answer isn't equal value, then you've lost.
Yeah. I honestly feel they should have, like, my personal opinion is I feel they should have kept Hyman.
Yeah, well, they decided that they wouldn't be able to sign Morgan Rielly. if that was the case.
Yeah.
Might want to relive that one.
Yeah, and Kadri as well. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
well, again, I'm not going to anoint the guys who left. The Hyman thing was a money decision. The Kadri thing was based on suspensions 2 years in a row against the team. And I could understand why they want to trade him, but you have to bring back. This guy was a bona fide, top-notch third-line center on that roster who played with a lot of grit. What they got back was a Swiss Army knife who was a finesse player and a defenseman who didn't fit. So, I mean, that's not a good thing. Now, maybe you don't bring it back in the exact trade, but you do need a center who plays with grit, and they never found one.
No. Now, I mean, here's one. Do you actually, and something that's also bounced in my head is, do you actually see Kadri returning to Toronto? I don't, but I then again, I don't know.
I would say if the team was in a better position, they've got more work to do than just adding a third line center here. They need tougher, consistent wingers. The blue line, which was flawless last year, needs some work. They have a glut of goaltenders now, so they could trade one. It's going to be interesting to see what they do at the NHL trade deadline, which is early in March. Again, depends on, I think there's, six games before then because of the Olympic break, or five games. So it'll depend on where they are in the standings, but they've got some people they could move out the door and bring back some assets. So it's sort of in a position they haven't been in a long time.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I mean, no, and it's not, and certainly it isn't the answer, but I mean, we were talking about Marner there a while ago. Marner and, like, they're both, they're both Ontario guys, right? So, I think there is something there that, you know, I don't know, they, maybe they'll, I don't know, maybe they'll want to finish their careers as Leafs, or, I don't know.
Yeah, could be. I think there's a lot of things that are written about the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think the media isn't as tough as people think. I just think there's more media than you get in most markets.
Not yes. That
it's not really mean-spirited. There are, you know, there's always an edge. There's always a right side and a left side to every equation. But I think that last year is a good example of when the team was winning during the regular season. Nobody had anything to say about John Tavares not wearing the C or Mitch Marner, whether he was going to be around or not, because the team played was really good until Game 5 and Game 7 against Florida. And then, of course, because of the long Stanley Cup drought, when the team doesn't perform well, as it's not doing now, people get upset because they want it to win. I think that's the end of it. But there's so much media around that, of course, it's talked about. We like to call that passion.
Yep. Yeah, that's another. Yep. Yep. That's another side of it in Toronto. That's another side of it. Like, also too, they also want to be on. Like, they also would want to be on winning teams too. So I don't think that would matter to them. The whole finishing in Toronto or Ottawa or wherever or on a Canadian team, even unless they got the value.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess it's a storyline. I don't know how deep the storyline goes, but they've got some work to do. I think that's the bottom line on it.
No, exactly. Yep. Yeah. And it'll also see now at, I mean, yeah, the trade debt, like, I'm interested to see what the Leafs do at the NHL trade deadline. Whether they are sellers or what they end up doing.
Yeah, well, I think most people assume at this point they'll be selling.
But mm-hmm.
You've got some UFA contracts that are up that you could spin and trade them, and they could actually come back and sign with you. I'm just going to look at their list and go through some of this. So let me work my phone here. So on UFA contracts, up front, Yarncroke, Scott Lawton, Bobby McMahon, who's highly talked about in terms of getting a nice return on the blue line, just Troy Stetcher, and none of the goalies are UFAs. But, you know, if you get, you're offered a first-round pick and a good player for Bobby McMahon, I think you'd make that trade. And if you wanted to re-sign him, sure. And if you didn't, I'm sure there's another Bobby McMahon-style player out there. This is a, we call these guys late bloomers. Nothing against them, but they're late bloomers, and a lot of teams have those guys that have served a number of years with their team, and they just, they let them go and they find other positions. So, you know, that'd be somebody there. I don't like to throw, I don't like to attach names to.
No.
But there's value there for, without a doubt.
What do you think of Waugh on how he's performed?
I think he's a good hockey player. He plays the way the coach wants, defensively responsible. He comes in at $3 million. He doesn't bother me. He's not a concern for me. He'd either be a third or fourth line center on any good team. So I mean, he was with Vegas for a number of years. I don't see him as a negative. He's a positive.
And Carlo, think he still fits?
Well, there's your trade, first round pick.
Yeah, there we go.
Fraser Minton for Brandon Carlo, who last year. This is an interesting topic for me because it spreads into another problem. The right partner for Morgan Riley. The search has been on for years for the right partner, and when Brandon Carlo showed up, we go, "There's the right partner for him." But look what it cost you. And then for whatever reason, during the summer, there were all these Brandon Carlo trade rumors, and I'm thinking to myself, "You gave up a first round. Well, you gave up two first round picks. Fraser Minton looks pretty good in a Boston uniform, and you gave him to Boston." That's not a sore point. And the pick is top five protected, which means if the Leafs miss the playoffs and they end up losing the lottery and have the sixth overall pick, they lose it. That's devastating. That's a tough one.
Yeah, and I think, too, certainly they're going to, like, they'll have to take some kind of a gamble on it. Right, they're going to have to take some kind of a gamble and see, not a gamble, but take, they're going to have to see and try out something that makes sense for the team.
Well, you know, so if you traded Bobby McMahon for a draft pick or two, or a bottom line player, then you've taken care of the draft picks. You're restocking through the draft, but unless you're drafting in the top five or let's say top 10 down, and by the way, the pick they traded away next year is top 10 protected. So you're acquiring draft picks who take several years to dent your roster. So here's the problem I've always had with the Leafs is you can't do two things at once. You have to have a steady stream of draft picks. So if you delete that steady stream, then you're going for it. And if you're going for it and you don't succeed, you've failed, which is where they are now. That's the difference in the Raptors story and the Leafs story.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to sort of protect all parts of the picture, and they haven't done that. They've exposed themselves in terms of going for it every year, and they don't have anything to show for it. So, it's great to say, well, look at all these draft picks we got. That's fine. A lot of teams do that, but then it takes years for the draft picks to show up. Is everybody willing to do that?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the big question, right? And also, but you know, like they had, you know what? They made some really remember what? Like I felt like they made some really good trades. In Dubas's last year with the Leafs when they got remember when they got folks like Sam Lafferty, and I realized why it was done.
Yeah. Well, that's another series of patchwork stuff.
Yep.
McCabe was a good acquisition, but you know the bottom line is it didn't work out in the playoffs. So
no,
that's what it was done for. It wasn't to succeed in the regular season, because they've done that. So I guess you could look at that as a bit of a failure.
Yeah. And I realized, too, like, I mean, I realized that Dubas was kind of on his way out. I do realize that, and he wanted to make some kind of a push there. I realized all of that, but it didn't work out. And some of them are still around. I think, I mean, McCabe's still there.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at it, Ali, that this was a team that was built top-heavy. The big four forwards, now the big three or the big two and a half, however you want to say it. But they didn't really build around those guys properly. They added a lot of players, but they didn't really build around. And that's why the Hyman loss is huge, because that's the top. It's a top-line left winger who, in some respects, they really haven't replaced either. I mean, obviously, Matthew Nyes is a really good young hockey player, but he's not on the top line all the time. Hyman was. So, you know, they didn't really build around the core players. They sort of left the core players alone because they were too busy dealing with a flat cap and deciding that, you know, other people would get the money. It's a long, complicated story, and everybody has their version of it, but it failed. That's the bottom line. It didn't work. So what do you do about that? I guess the word is retool. So we'll see what that means over the next, you know, in a month's time, it's over a month that we're going to find out the trade deadline. And during the course of the summer, you wonder if the window for playoff success is closed.
Yep. Yeah. And then you have to try and build around that. And I mean, like even the Raptors, like they had Scotty, like, see, when they made their transitions, right, they had Scotty, and this is the difference that we've talked about, too, but just to add to that, they had Scotty Burns, but they built around him.
Yes, they did. Well, they peeled off Pascal Siakam and OG, and Freddie left on his own, but they brought in good players, and they drafted well. I mean, their draft record is, I want to say, second to none. You got this guy, CMB, who's on the team this year, first-round pick that nobody really knew much about. He plays like he's been in the league for 5 years. I mean, he looks good, and all their bench players are young. They look good. A lot of those bench players over the last 2 years, because of injury and a thin roster, were pressed into starting positions, and they've really developed those. That's the story. The Raptors' story is player development. So two things, asset management and player development. For the Leafs, it's not asset management, and because of that, it's not player development.
That's been the difference. And the Leafs play tonight, actually.
Yes, they do. They're in Calgary. We have the game tomorrow night in Edmonton, and we'll see.
Yeah, I think it'll be you and Stu, I think, tomorrow night.
In Stu, yeah. We had technical problems on Saturday, which were kind of weird.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I can't explain it to people, but the voice, sometimes it's the programming sound. Sometimes it's me hearing Stu this way, and Stu would hear me the same way. It makes a weird sound, so you can't really know what the guy's saying. And it starts at the start of a sentence, and then you don't know when it's going to clear up. So
yeah,
that's always fun to work with.
Yeah. And there was Cameron Gaunce back there as well, who also did the World Juniors this year.
Yeah, he's done, that was his second game on the Leafs. He does Sports Center work analyzing games, and he was the analyst on the World Juniors. You are correct, on the radio.
Yeah. Hey, what did you think of that? That was a good tournament I mean, not the result, but it was a really fun tournament again.
It was a good tournament. You learn a lot about prospects when you watch that tournament. Canada just wasn't good enough. That's the bottom line. Just not good enough. So that's got a little further than the last 2 years, but that's a pretty significant notation that 3 years in a row they came up, you know, just a little off. Well, the 2 years before was a lot off.
Yeah, and they had and the play-by-play crew did a great job on the audio side this year.
Yeah, on the radio was Matt Cullen and David Bowen.
Yeah,
he did a good job.
Oh, he did. Yep. Yeah, Matt Cullen was good too, and you know, there have been, you know, I've always enjoyed, you know, I always have fun with those tournament that, you know, checking that stuff out, and they're, and just enjoying the, you know, I enjoying the broadcast. That's what it is for me. Enjoying the games, enjoying the teams, and also enjoying the broadcast.
Well, I like it. It's reminds me of when I used to do auto racing. It's, 10 days long, and there's something that happens every day, and then it's over. It happens pretty fast.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, with, you know, there's always a lot, like, there's always a lot to sort of, yeah, I mean, Easton Cowan for the Leafs has been up and down, hasn't he?
Well, so there's the excellent example of your draft pick. There's nothing the matter with drafting Easton Cowan. He's a really good prospect. But you could see over the course of this year how he has to learn the NHL game. And that's, you know, I keep going back to how Nick Robertson took 3 to 4 years to learn it. And yeah. What you have to do is you have to do certain things along the boards to apply pressure that causes the turnover. And the funny thing is about the boards play is you'll see guys fighting along the boards. I'm not saying you knock the guy over. You have to get positioned along the boards. You have to win the battle physically. Without overpowering the guy. And the other thing is sometimes it's just a stick battle. But when that puck is turned over on the boards, it has a funny habit of squirting into a sweet spot. And Robertson himself scored a goal like that recently where the puck squirted over to him and he nailed it. It's kind of important, that boards play in the offensive zone.
Uh-huh, yeah. And certainly that has been. And, I mean, he's been sort of up in, like, he's... I mean, certainly he came from the OHL, which, from the London Knights, actually, which...
It's a different game, though.
It is.
In junior hockey, you're showing people what you're capable of. In the NHL, it's here's the roster, here's where you fit on the roster, and because you're in this spot, here's what you have to do to fit into the team. Now, there have been many junior hockey players over the years. Darcy Tucker's a good example, where they had great totals, but they had to play a different way, or at least more physically. I'm not saying he was light in junior, because he wasn't, but he had to use more physical play in the NHL and accept that he wasn't going to score 50 goals. There's a lot of people like that. You'll find some of the best third liners in NHL history had really good junior totals, but they understood that on the team they were on, they had to play defensively sound and physical hockey, and the goals would show up whenever they did. That's just something you have to buy into. Now, there are juniors that have good offensive totals that don't buy in, and it'll last long. They're out. They'll bounce from team to team. Three teams later, they're playing in Europe.
Yeah. Yep, that's kind of it. Like, that's where it kind of, yeah. And, yeah, I mean, it is certainly a different brand of hockey. I mean, the OHL certainly has become a professional league of its own, too, if you look at it.
Yeah, look, I'm not saying that junior hockey's light. It's just that the NHL is way more intense.
Exactly, yeah.
There's much more at stake, and it's a little more specific. That's all. Let's put it this way. It is what it is. It's a grown-up version of what happens in junior hockey, right?
Yep. Yeah. I certainly, you know, I certainly enjoy the NHL, and yeah, and certainly, and that's one of the other reasons I like the World Junior Hockey Championship at Christmas. I believe it's called the IIHF World Junior Hockey Championship.
Yep, it is. Well, you see them playing for their countries, and the I guess the interesting thing is a lot of those guys are playing in North America. A lot of them are playing in Canada. So when Czechia causes Canada problems, a lot of those guys are playing in the same junior league as the Canadians. So.
Yep. Yeah, and all, and also, like, they've got, you know, like, I mean, it's an under 18, under 19 tournament, I believe.
Well, there's an under 18, there's an under 20.
Under 20. How, yeah, under, yeah. 20, sorry. Yeah.
Which, there is an under 18.
Yeah, that's which. Yeah, so that's, you know, and I certainly, it's, yeah, and you know, and it gives them a chance, though, to play, like, a chance to sort of compete, you know, for their country, like, first time at that level.
Well, a lot of them have played in the under 18, so, I mean, they're all part of, it's part of a system. A lot of the Canadian guys are like that. What I like looking at is the guys that aren't drafted, the very young players. I think Canada had two of them, and there was another guy on the Canadian blue line that had been passed over in two straight drafts. So it's always interesting. It just, what it does for me is, you know, you have all the scouting reports, and you get to see firsthand, you look at a guy and you go, okay, I could see that. Or in other players, you go, yeah, I can't see that. But you know, the scouting is year-round. We're getting sort of the midway point of the season scouting report that we're seeing. But, you know, there's other stuff that happens after that. Certainly the Memorial Cup is a chance to upgrade or downgrade your status. It's interesting because, you know, I've watched junior hockey all my life, and there's some players that just transition as they go on to other leagues very well, and others that don't. But I guess that's, you know, you'd say that about a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah, speaking of the Memorial Cup, I would love to, I don't know, I'm not a fan of how they do, I wish they did it like NHL style a little bit, where you've got, where you have the seven games.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'd like, see, instead of having it, see, because how it works now is they have the OHL, the W, and the WHL.
Yeah.
And the, I think it's the QMJHL, whatever the Quebec Junior League is called.
Maritimes, Quebec Maritimes.
Yeah. They've got, And they have like, it's like a week long tournament. I think it's got like comprised of six teams or whatever, or, and that.
Well, the host team, the host city gets in.
Yeah, and that's another thing. The host team, regardless, is always in.
Yeah, hopefully the host team is good. Yeah, nothing's perfect, right? But it's got a great record. I like it so.
Oh, you like how they do it?
Well, it's always been like that. So I know what you're saying. You know, mm-hmm. you'd have four teams in there, and then you'd have all these best of seven things that go on till July.
Yeah. Well, actually, I think what I would like to see is kind of them each league have their each league have their own final championship and just do the seven games.
Say that again, because each league does have a series of playoffs.
They do, but yeah. I think that, yeah, no, but and I think, yeah, they do, and I think that be the, that be the winner, like that be the champion, and.
Well, that's what happens. The champion advances, right?
Yeah.
The OHL champion gets into the Memorial Cup, and if it's in Ontario, then the host city gets in.
Yep. Yeah, and that's never, that's actually not made a lot of sense to me, unless they, even if it's the host team, I still like to see them kind of go, like, kind of, if they can make it to the, like, kind of make it, you know what I mean, like, just kind of play the four rounds of the OHL, of the,
It would be nice if the host city was either the league champion or the runner-up, absolutely. I think a lot of times I'd have to go through to find out, you know, every system has a flaw. So I'm sure sometimes
it
hasn't worked out well, but I think most of the time it does. Otherwise they would have changed it.
Yeah, you're right about that. Yeah. I would actually love to see the Memorial Cup. I would have loved to have seen it come back to Kitchener. I really would have.
Oh, that's a great rink. That's Maple Leaf.
Yeah. Gardens. The odd.
Yeah. Maple Leaf Gardens Junior.
Yeah. Yep. Definitely. And yeah, certainly. And I would have loved to have seen that. Although nowadays, I have to say, I pay more attention to the NHL. I mean, but.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I like the NHL format.
I do NBA too. Yep.
Format. The NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs are pretty darn good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I certainly enjoy them. Yep. And yeah, and hey, you know, the Sabres have been doing quite a little. They've been doing better this year too. I mean, this year.
Kind of odd. You fire the general manager and the team gets. How does that happen?
Yeah, I know. I mean, we're familiar with it in being Leaf, you know, covering the Leafs, but.
They're unconscious. I never thought they were that bad. I don't know what was like I don't know why they stumbled around so many years in a row, but it hasn't done that much in terms of change, but they're playing well. But, you know, I guess, what does that tell you? That the ability between teams isn't that much different? If you could just get everybody focused to play a certain way, you can win. I don't understand why it doesn't happen. Like, why some teams just seem to unravel and other teams find the way. Because if you look at the rosters, you go, why is this successful here? And why is it a failure here? Sometimes it's hard for me to understand that. Of course, if you watch how they play, it's pretty easy. You go, well, they're doing everything right. When you lose, you're not competing. I mean, that's the bottom line. But most people that, you know, most teams that don't compete full out, they're going to lose.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The Bobby McMahon thing, that's going to be, I'm interested to see what happens for him, whether he gets traded for the Leafs, so it'll be once we have some clarity on that one, looking forward to breaking all the trades down.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. He's a UFA, so then you have to ask the question, what's his market value if you're the Leaf general manager, and do you want to pay that? Or do you just, you know, do you want to trade him and try and re-sign him? Or do you want to trade him and not re-sign him and get whatever you get back? You know, from all the reports, it's a pretty high demand for him. So you have to do what you have to do.
A lot of things I think are going to be interesting. The status of head coach Craig Berube is going to be interesting in the summertime. There's a lot of stuff that's going to be coming up for the Leafs that to see what actually ends up happening.
Well, trade deadline always tells you what management thinks, and failure tells you what the front office thinks. So if they're to continue on the road they are now or end up where they are now, be an interesting off-season review for sure.
Yeah.
Then you've got big players going into the final 2 years of their contract, which means you've got a year to play with. And after that, once you get into the final year, it turns into a kind of a stair game.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Very interesting. Yeah. And but I'm looking forward to it. And I'm really looking forward to it. And we'll enjoy the rest of the Joe Bowen's final calls as he heads into retirement. So that'll be, you know, let's enjoy his calls as well for the rest of the season.
Yeah. Joe's just trying to think when the last break. Well, if they don't miss the playoffs, his last game would be April 15th. Game in Ottawa on TSN 1050.
Yeah, that'll be something special. That will definitely be something special. Joe Bowen and Jim Ralph, they've been great for a number of years.
Absolutely. Bonesy, I think, is 44 years, and Ralphie's 30-plus. Good tandem. One of the best, if not
one of the best, yes. One of the best. And I'm looking forward to, and I'm also looking forward to doing a show. I'm looking forward to doing a show with you again real soon, too.
Absolutely. You tell me when, and we'll do it.
Thank you so much for listening to and or watching The Ali Musa Show. To learn more about the show, please visit theallimusashow.ca. while you're there, subscribe to the newsletter so you never miss an update. Besides, it's free. Enter your email address and hit subscribe right on the homepage. The Ali Musa Show is part of the Musa Slobodian Network, where good conversations happen. To learn more about the other excellent programming offered by the network, please visit themusaslobodiannetwork.ca.